Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. Joining us today is Tony Holloway. Tony, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you for having me here today.
So Tony Holloway is the St. Petersburg, Florida Police Chief and also currently the Criminal Justice Section's Chair of the Law Enforcement Committee. So Tony is joining us to continue our conversation around police reform. Police reform, it's obviously a topic that is on everyone's mind, has been for the last several months. In just observing how many people listen to our episodes, we see that there is a great interest in this topic, and we know that there are things that have come up and become more important that we didn't have a chance to address in our first conversation around this. And so Tony is going to help us speak to some of those other issues today. So we're going to jump back into that conversation. So before we talk about more long-term police reforms, let's talk about what we've seen so far. Many cities and states have passed police reform bills now. They've been responding to the public outcry. And I'm curious to know, Tony, what your experience has been in engaging in the discussion of reform. Do you feel like the relevant stakeholders have been included in the conversations that have led to these police reform bills that we've seen? And if not, who would you like to see included in these discussions?
Well, I want to say thank you for inviting me here today. I think the right people at the table, but I think the people that we're missing is really two important groups. One of the most important groups that we're need to listen to is our young people. When I mean young people, that age between 18 to 21, because if we're going to rebuild, we need to start there also when you bring them to the table. And the people that really are missing are the people in the middle. We're hearing from the far right, we're hearing from the far left, and we got to find that middle point and really have those people in the middle point come to the table so we can bring this all together.
Thank you. And have you been participating in those conversations as well in your area where police reform is being discussed?
Yes, I have been talking to those groups, both our faith leaders, our community leaders, our non-leaders, so to speak, just people that have a voice in the community. So you can gather all that information so you can build a strategy as we move forward with reform, because it's really a community strategy on what is reform going to look like.
And I asked that because, you know, I was following the news in the instance in Seattle where Carmen Best has recently resigned. And she had not been included in those conversations that led to that reform. And so I was just, that's more of where that interest comes from. It's just curiosity in, she had not been included in those conversations and had valuable things to discuss. And one of the things that was really concerning is as they, you know, one of the things they wanted to do was move to cutting the budget. One of the probably unintended outcomes was going to lead to job loss for members of her force that were from diverse backgrounds that could increase diversity. And so I just have been curious on what your experience was, what other experiences have been is in seeing that, because as you said, it's important to have the right people at the table to make sure that meaningful change can happen and the outcomes that we truly want, that we can all converse. I say all as if that includes me. I'm just hosting this podcast. I'm not one of the people that'll be at that table. But, you know, persons like yourself. And so thank you for sharing what your experience has been there. So moving on, since our first discussion on police reform, more events like the clashes in Portland have raised concern over militarized force, whether it's on a more federal level or just the police. The discussion around military uniforms in law enforcement have come up. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this. How do you feel about the role of a military uniform or, you know, the weapons that are considered military level And additionally, your thoughts on the calls for demilitarizing the police and what sort of impact that would have.
Sure. So I'll say I'll blame law enforcement for that because we haven't done a great job on describing the type of uniforms that we wear. Sometimes we're in polo shirts, sometimes we're in short sleeve shirts, sometimes for formal we wear long sleeve shirts. And then sometimes you see us just wearing the other uniform that's totally blacked out where it doesn't have our badge and pins on it because we know we're going to get involved with some incidents where we don't want to lose our badge, we don't want to lose our name tag. So we dress for what the event is going to be. So I think we can do a better job to explain people to show that we have, for us, we have four different uniforms. So as we have these meetings with the community, let's sit down and say, this is uniform A, this is uniform B, and this is uniform C, and then explain to people why we wear this uniform. Because those same uniforms that you see that we wear for civil unrest, well, those are the same uniforms we wear when there's a hurricane, when there's a national, because those are utility uniforms that we're trying to make sure that we can do our job easy and safer. So that's the first part of it, explain the demilitarizing of a police department. What are the uniforms made and why we have it? The second part are the vehicles that we have. Again, explain those vehicles. As a police chief, no, I don't need a tank going down the street, but I do need a vehicle for a rescue. When people talk about demilitarizing the police department, they should also look at what's on the other side. Now, I'm all for Second Amendment. Everybody should have a right to bear arms. But then you have to look at what weapon does the community have? People have AR-15. They have armor-piercing bullets. They have magazine that's capable of holding 50 rounds. If I have to go in and save someone's family, I've got to make sure that, number one, we can save that person's family, and number two, that those men and women come home each and every night. I always say I date myself. I've been involved in law enforcement for 35 years. And when you saw police department elevating to different weapons, they were really elevating to meet what was on the street already. Way, way back when it first started, when they had the first shooting in California, those officers only had their revolvers, so to speak, revolvers and automatic handguns and shotguns. They couldn't compete with an AR-15. So they had to graduate to make sure that they could have a round that could handle the same thing, go to the fight with the same type of weapons. So I think people really need to take a good look at that. Again, come down to the police department. When you're saying demilitarized, what weapons are you talking about? Are you talking about a rifle versus a rifle? Then we need that. Are you talking a 50 cal rifle? We don't need that, but we need a rifle that can match another rifle.
Right. Thank you. It's valuable insight for that conversation. And continuing our conversation, I want us to continue the discussion about creating meaningful change to address racial justice. As time has passed and we've received more information, more reform bills have passed, there are some additional reform action items that have come up, like I mentioned, that I'd like to discuss with you now, similar to demilitarizing. And as I introduce each new topic, my question to you, Tony, will remain the same for each of these. So if you could just answer this question as we go through each new topic, what impact do you feel like this can have in creating meaningful change? So first, kind of building off of what we were just talking about, weapons. Weapons are tools that police officers use. Some cities like DC have banned the use of tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets, or stun grenades to disperse a crowd. So the question is, what impact do you feel like this can have in creating meaningful change?
When you talk about taking those tools away from law enforcement, then the next question is, what tools are they going to use in replacement of that? So let's start with tear gas. So if you take tear gas away, tell us then what else are we going to use to disperse a crowd? Because you're still going to need that for civil unrest. If you're asking officers to de-escalate, I think rubber bullet is a very good tool to use because you're using force, but you're not using deadly force. You're somewhere in the middle. So all those tools that you're trying to take away is really then the question would be, then what else do you want us to use? Do you want us to escalate all the way up to using deadly force? And I don't think you want that. I think the tear gas is a great tool to push people back and let people know for the people that really want to disperse, you need to go. So all those things that you're talking about taking away, then my question would be, then what tools do you want them to add on? Because when the police chief or the sheriff has gotten to the point where they're using tear gas, they probably used everything, asking people to leave, telling people to leave. They've used everything else. So that's the next thing that they have in their toolbox besides going to lethal force.
Right. Thank you. So as the public continues to look at the example of what happened to Breonna Taylor and look for answers and look for ways to prevent this from happening, there's the idea of banning no-knock warrants has become increasingly popular. So again, Tony, what impact do you feel like banning no-knock warrants would have?
I think when you say banning no-knock search warrants, I think you have to more clarify that. And what I mean by that is there may be a point where you do need to do a no-knock search warrant where it becomes a safety to the community and safety to the officer. But that's a high level. And what I mean by high level, I mean that needs a judge, a chief to all look at that. Are you going out there, terrorist suspect that you know if you do knock on the door that those officers are going to be killed trying to make entry or something's going to happen to the community? That's what we look at. I would then, the next level, a no-knock search warrant for drugs. No, there's no danger to the officers. There's no danger to the person inside. So I think instead of saying ban no-knock search warrant, I think there is going to be certain circumstances. But I think you need to take that bar and raise it so high, you need a whole lot of reason to do a no-knock search warrant. And I want to clarify that when I say a whole lot. I mean, you got to show that those officers are going to be killed entering that house because they didn't go after that suspect, or that suspect is going to cause harm in the community. Drugs do not reach that level. Stolen checks do not leave. You know, like I said, you need to really make it a serious crime.
Okay. Thank you.
You seem very passionate about that.
Yeah.
I always tell people in 35 years, I've never seen a no-knock search warrant. And I've been in charge of SWAT. I've never seen a no-knock search warrant.
Okay. That's really interesting to hear. I'd like to just get a better idea, if you can, share with our listeners. One of the things that we like to do is give our listeners, where we can, some action to take if they're really passionate about something that we've talked about. And I'm just curious if there's something they can take to their community leaders to ask for more specifically, if they want to raise the standard for what a no-knock warrant would be granted for, if there's anything specific that they can look to or more resources, or they can help move that forward in any way where people are looking to do that.
So when I say raise that bar, I mean, you have to have proof that that suspect is going, has killed someone, is going to kill someone, and not just, well, I read a threat report. No, factual information. Prove that that suspect has already killed someone, not planning to kill someone, but already has killed someone, and he or she's a danger to the community. And by sending your officers in there, you're placing them more in the harm risk. But that you tried everything else, that, you know, that person never comes out of their home, that person never walks down the street. You know, you need to do a lot of police work. If you're seeing that suspect A is locked in his house, he's never coming out, then, yeah, you think about it. But if suspect A goes to the grocery store, which, you know, he or she does, so you really need to really say, you know what? I'm never going to get to that person, and this is the only way. So, like I said, you got to raise that bar so high that you got to check off all the boxes. This guy's never been out of the house in 5 days, but if I know he comes outside his house, he's going to kill someone. Just a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And the next item is a requirement for police to give aid or call for medical care for any individual in police custody who has an obvious injury or complains of an injury. What are your thoughts on that?
It's very simple. In law enforcement, our job is to serve and protect. So the key thing is there to serve. That person needs medical attention. It's not just your job. It's your responsibility. It's your oath. It's everything that you raise your hand for. If that person's in dire need of help, then it's your number one job is to render aid to that person. There's no question asked. I don't care who that person is, what they've done. They now need help. You need to give them that aid.
Right. Pretty straightforward. Thank you. What about whistleblower protection for police misconduct? Does this already exist, or is this something that's kind of missing across the board? I'm just kind of curious. I kind of assumed that this was already in place. So could you first sort of share a little background on what you think exists, or does it depend on different jurisdictions? Does everybody get to set their own standard for this? And then also, would you please speak to what that can do for creating reform?
This policy, whistleblowing policy, should be enforced, or it should be in place. If it isn't, then I think every county, every city, every state should have it placed there, because it goes back the other direction. If you don't report someone that has done something wrong, we're going to fire you. I mean, I'll use that. I would do everything I can to fire you, because you are now involved in that same act by tolerating it to happen. So that officer should be protected. He or she should be protected. But at the same time, there should also be something in place that if they don't report it, something should happen to them also.
Again, pretty straightforward. Thank you. Some communities are calling for a mandate for members of the public to serve on a police hearing board. I think you kind of already spoke to this, but just for the sake of speaking to it specifically, what are your thoughts on this?
Sure. So if you're going to build trust and accountability, then yeah, you should have that board in place. We have it here in St. Pete. So after every case that we review here, we send it to our citizen review committee, and they take a look at it, and they tell us if we've done something wrong, we've done something right. But again, it's just that second layer of trust that's out there. Now, a lot of people are going to say, should they have more power? No, I mean, just like I can't sit on a medical board and tell you if a doctor did the procedure right, or I can't sit on a board where lawyers tell you a lawyer did something right or wrong, but someone still should review it and then come back and ask those questions. Well, sheriff or chief, why did you come up with that decision, and how did you come about that decision? And be able to explain it, because that's where you're building trust in the community.
Okay, and public databases to share police misconduct.
We have that now in place. You know, Florida's totally different. You can contact the police department and ask for any records of a police officer. That should be made available. You want to know who's policing your community. Therefore, the police department should tell you everything about that officer. When we raise our hand, we know what we're going into. So those files should be made available.
Okay, great. And working groups to examine hiring practices and or traffic stop practices.
So we here at St. Pete, we've already had it placed. I think if you're going to build trust in the community, one, you should have someone from the community sitting on your hiring board. And the second part is traffic stop. You should also have that in place where the citizens can see the traffic stop you're making in your community so they can see that. We actually do that. We track every traffic stop that's made here. An officer cannot make a traffic stop unless he or she gives a reason for the traffic stop, and then they clear with a reason for the traffic stop, whether they wrote your ticket or not, and that is monitored and that is tracked.
Okay. And then the big question that kind of has some different meanings in some different places, defunding the police. What are your thoughts on the calls to defund the police, and what does it mean to you when you hear defund the police?
Defund the police means a couple things to me, but I'll just say what is really out there. It's really a buzzword, and I really think people need to sit down and really talk about what defunding means, because you're going to find out that every police chief and every sheriff will agree to you to a point. To me, defunding means taking away non-police calls or non-police jobs and giving it back to the community. A good example is a lot of police departments go to calls where delinquent juveniles or I can't control my child. That's not a police call. I feel like you can take that money out of my budget and put it to another budget, to professionals, and have them go to that call. Someone is going through mental issues. That's not a danger to the community. But someone calls up and says, hey, you know what? I feel like I'm going to harm myself. Why send a police officer out there? Why not have a professional, someone that's trained to go to that call? So to me, defunding means look at my budget, find out what non-police matters that I'm going to, take those calls and send them to someone else. But if you're talking about straight defunding the police department, then I will tell you that, okay, let me look at the calls that I'm going to, and these are the calls that I won't be able to go to if you take this money out of my budget. So to me, defunding means look at the job that you're doing that is non-criminal that other professionals can go to, whereas a healthcare provider or social service person, and give that money to them and let those handle it. But at the same time, then I'm going to take those calls away from the police department and let a professional handle that.
Thank you for all of that. And now another big question for you, a big picture question for our conversation. When we talk about addressing racial justice as a nation, we've been pretty focused on police reform as the place that's going to solve this problem. Now, I'm curious to know if you have any recommendations for reform that can create change in this space. Should we be expanding our focus? Who do you consider your partners in creating a more equitable criminal justice system? So essentially, do you agree that police reform is where we're going to find our answers? Or, yeah, do you have any other recommendations for our listeners?
I think police reform is a great start, but I think it's a bigger picture than that. And first of all, I think it starts at the city, state, and federal government. Because I look at law enforcement as our job is to enforce the law. Our job is not to, so to speak, create the law. If the city, state, and federal government, if they don't like a law that's on the books, take it off the books. Take it away from me. And I think we need to have that conversation. You know, so, and I'll use the one everybody talks about, you know, marijuana. If you don't want police to arrest for marijuana, take it off the books. State, local, and federal officials, if you really want to do justice reform, let's go through the statute book, each case, because, and then decide on what cases or what laws you don't want on the books, and law enforcement won't enforce those. And then once you're done with that, then let's go to the court system. Because there are two types of crimes out there. And I don't even call it a racial thing. I call it a money thing. Because the more money you have, the less time you do, and so forth and so on. So let's look at those things. So it's a real big picture. Law enforcement, as you can see, I'm very passionate about this. It's a great start for reform. But then if you don't want us to do something, then take it away from us and accept the fact that you want to make it a non-criminal issue. And let's move forward with that.
Thank you. So we appreciate you talking with us about and sharing your thoughts and insights and experiences on these different topics as we explore criminal justice reform in this specific space, police reform. And I guess before we wrap up today, I just want to give you the opportunity to give any sort of final thoughts about this time that we're in and the calls that we're hearing from the public. Are there any last thoughts that you'd like to share? Anything that you think we've missed or anything else? I just want to give you that chance to share any other thoughts.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for inviting me on to your podcast. And I think this is a great start. But as I said before, and I say to other groups, it's time for us to stop talking and it's time for action. Because I don't want to have this conversation a year from now, 2 years from now. We've had this conversation long enough. We've talked about these issues long enough. It's time to start taking these issues down one at a time. Because if we just push this to the back burner, it's going to come right back to the front again. And each time it comes to the front, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Because there's more issues out there because we haven't solved the first issue. So let's stop having conversation. Let's figure out what our priorities are and let's start addressing some of these priorities. So when an issue does come up, we can say, we talked about it, we addressed it, and here's the solution to it. Not we talked about it, and we're going to find a solution. If people are tired of hearing us talking about trying to find a solution. People want a solution now.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything that I should say to follow that. That should be our close. So I guess let me just say thank you for your work in working toward those solutions that we're all seeking. So, and thank you for joining us. today to share all of that.
Thank you. I appreciate everything you're doing.
Thanks. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Just Pod.